Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Chapter 10, Texts 26 and 27. These are prayers continued. The ladies of Hastinapur, as Krishna is leaving for Dwarka. So, in these verses, they're appreciating how fortunate are the people who reside in Dwarka. But for that matter, how fortunate are all the associates of Krishna in Mathura, the descendants of Yadu, the presence of Krishna in Dwarka, making it more glorious than the heavenly planets, enhancing the celebrity of earth. So Prabhupada is going to explain why they're right, why it is like that. Very fitting glorifications. So text 26. Oh, how supremely glorified is the dynasty of King Yadu. And how virtuous is the land of Mathura, where the supreme leader of all living beings, the husband of the goddess of fortune, has taken his birth and wandered in his childhood. We can take it that specifically said that they never saw Krishna before. We can take it that they never went to Mathura or Vrindavan, but they're appreciating how fortunate are those persons who reside there. So Prabhupada begins speaking about Krishna's appearance. He's expanding on Janma Karma Chame Divyam. When Krishna appears, he does by his own sweet will. It's not like a conditioned soul. Conditioned soul, embodied, bound up by the laws of karma, forced out of that body and forced into another body of no, just by the forces of nature, not by their, I think I'll appear in that family, and I think I'll appear in that place, and I think I'll appear at that time. That's not the case with conditioned souls. But with Krishna, it's the case. He chooses. And there's no reason even for him to appear other than his sweet will, his kindness. It's all arranged by his internal potency. And Prabhupada then spends some time describing the appearance of Krishna as like the appearance and disappearance of the sun. Nice example. The sun is always there. We say the sun appears. Mm-hmm. And then the sun sets. That's our relative perspective. The fact is, the sun is always there. The earth is moving, and then we can see the sun, and then we can see it fully, and then we can see it a little bit, and then we can't see it at all. The sun is always there. The appearance of Krishna is like the appearance of the sun. the disappearance of Krishna, like the setting of the sun. From our vision, the sun is no longer visible. From our vision, the sun becomes visible. But Krishna exists at all times and at every place. But by his causeless mercy, when he appears before us, we take it for granted that he has taken his birth. So we celebrate. Krishna has appeared. Krishna Janmashtami. It's not a celebration. But it's the celebration, in fact, is he is showing some special mercy. We're celebrating that manifestation of Krishna's special mercy. Then, again, one who can understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and whatever he does whenever during his manifest pastimes, that understanding alone entitles one to liberation. And a nice sentence here, I'll read it twice. What do we, when one thinks of liberation, what does that constitute? What's liberation? Liberation is obtainable after many births and after great endeavor in patience and perseverance and knowledge and renunciation, or the classic sense of thinking liberation. Many births. Persevering, being very patient, knowledge and renunciation, just this sustained effort of very, very, very high caliber of evolved consciousness and staying there and persevering and at last liberation. But Krishna is saying simply by knowing about the truth of the Lord's transcendental appearance and activities can get liberation at once. And where this is going is what the ladies are saying, and what to speak of those who are constantly in his association. How fortunate are they, and what's their destination? We can just imagine what is in store for those who actually enjoyed the company of the Lord in person, as a family member or a neighbor. All those citizens of Dwarka, how fortunate. Krishna is their neighbor. Where were our neighbors? Again, same idea. All those who were fortunate enough to associate with the Lord, the husband of the goddess of fortune, certainly obtained something in italics more than what is known as liberation. So that's what the ladies are saying. Therefore, rightly the dynasty and the land are both ever glorious by the grace of the Lord. So, when Krishna was called by Lord Brahma to please relieve the burden of the earth of the demoniac kings that are making it unbearable for her, their array of military might and abuse and strength and power. Oh, it's too much for Mother Earth. Please do something. I will appear soon. Please instruct the demigods that they should appear in the Yadu dynasty so they can assist me in my pastimes. And Krishna appeared in the Yadu dynasty, Yadu Nandana, just to glorify Yadu, because otherwise he's an obscure historical person, never would have heard of him, Yadu. But we heard of him because of Krishna's presence in his family. How supremely glorified is the dynasty of Yadu, and how virtuous is the land of Mathura. Why? The supreme leader of all living beings, the husband of Goddess of Fortune, has taken his birth in Yadu dynasty and wandered in Mathura in his childhood. So what is this? So again, what is the birth? Like the appearance and disappearance of the sun. It's mercy. Causeless mercy. He makes himself visible and performs activities that look like very human-like activities, but embedded within those human-like activities are very clear indicators not human. Text 27. Like Lord Brahma in his prayers after the Brahma Vimohan Lila, he says, someday the scientists may be able to count all the atoms in the universe. Or someday they may be able to count all the snowflakes. It's more comprehensive to count all the atoms, but all the snowflakes is a little more graphic. Or all the grains of sand in the seas and the deserts. They may be able to do that, but they'll never be able to reach the limit of your glories. And he's exhibiting those, but ordinary people don't see them. It's perplexing. It's paradoxical. But those who are devotees can see them, and they have great appreciation. And the qualification for seeing and appreciating is bhakti. And otherwise, the path of liberation is very troublesome. But the path of liberation through devotion is more than that kind of liberation. Undoubtedly, text 27. Undoubtedly, it is wonderful that Dwaraka, that's where Krishna is going, has defeated the glories of the heavenly planets and has enhanced the celebrity of the earth. The inhabitants of Dwaraka are always seeing the soul of all living beings, Krishna, in his loving feature. He glances at them and favors them with sweet smiles. So, the heavenly planets. Heavenly planets are sought after by pious souls of all religions of the world. They may have different ideas of what the heavenly planets are, but they're searching to reach the heavenly planets. And Prabhupada sneaks this one in. Modern scientists even agree that the timing arrangements of the higher planetary systems is different from that of the Earth. But in any case, the life duration in the heavenly planets is so much longer. A standard lifetime in the heavenly planets is 10,000 years by our calculation, or another measure is when one day passes on the heavenly planets, it's 6 months here. So another 6 months is 1 year. 1 year here is 1 day and 1 night there. Heavenly planets. So time is different. facilities for enjoyment is different. The beauty is different. Prabhupada writes, the beauty of the inhabitants is legendary. So people here hear about existence there and they want to go there. Now they're trying to reach the moon by spacecraft. So his point is, considering all this, the heavenly planets are more celebrated than Earth. He's just building his case. But the celebrity of Earth has defeated that of the heavenly planets because of Dwarka. The residents of heaven, come here to see Krishna. Or the associates of Krishna, they would come to visit Maharaj Yudhisthira. Why? Krishna is there, reigning as king. So, sacred places where Krishna performed his pastimes, there's three main divisions: Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. In decreasing order of intimacy, Vrindavan, most intimate, Mathura, and Dwarka. So here they're describing Dwarka. They're appreciating Vrindavan. They've mentioned the confidential pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. They're in Hastinapur, and even more, even more than their own Hastinapur is Mathura, and then Dwarka, because Dwarka is where Krishna is exhibiting his opulences in full. The same intimacy that exists in Vrindavan is not accessible in Dwarka. These places, these three places, are perpetually the holy lands of the Lord, and the inhabitants still take advantage of the holy places, even though the Lord is now out of their sight. So people are still living in these places, and because it's eternally the place of the Lord's pastimes, they're spiritually benefiting by residing there. Even though they can't see Krishna as he was seen 5,000 years ago. And very nice passage. The Lord is the soul of all living beings, and he desires always to have all the living beings in their sarup, in their constitutional position, to participate in transcendental life in his association. His attractive features and sweet smiles go deep into the heart of everyone, and at once, it is so done, the living being is admitted into the kingdom of God from which no one returns. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. He asked a question about chanting. There's one of the sections, you can listen to the Japa retreat recordings. There's a some recommendation by Bhaktivinoda Thakur on three things for improving japa. And the first one matches something that's found in Hari Bhakti Vilas by Sanatana Goswami, and it's meditating on the meaning. What's the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra? Who is Krishna? We can meditate, when we're chanting, the meaning of the Maha Mantra is a prayer to be engaged in service to the Lord. So the way that we did this at the Japa retreat was had everybody chant. I'm shortening everything. Had everybody chant, you know, at their own pace or in together, and then a little voiceover was to call out to the Lord, "Please accept me." Just to keep it really simple. Please accept me. So, please accept me. The irony is, he's calling us, please come. Please come. So that the resistance is on our side. Not from his side. It's not like, oh, I don't know, I don't know if I should accept you. You're not very nice. You're pretty irresponsible, you know. And whimsical, and I don't know if I accept you. It's not like that. He's inviting us. Just as Prabhupada is saying here. The Lord is the soul of all living beings, and he desires always to have all living beings in their sarup, in their constitutional position, to participate in transcendental life in his association. That's what he wants. And from our side, we're busy with our little God projects and on earth, trying to make our own little kingdoms, gather together resources and become king of our little domain. So, please accept me is entering into the mood and the meaning of the mantra. Anyway, the next, having developed that nicely, is feelings. And then the third is receiving mercy. You can align your mind and your heart to the mantra. The third thing is you'll feel mercy. When we had our 64 round day during the Japa retreat, the second half was very different, but the first half, the first 32 rounds in the association of the devotees in the temple room in Gitanagari, it was event after event after event of a downpour of mercy. It was a very nice experience. Without detailing, but the way he's expressed it here is Krishna's attractive features and his sweet smiles can go deep into the heart of everyone. That's mercy. So going back up, it's just that he appears. The sun appears. So it's a good thing the sun appears, because if the sun didn't appear, we wouldn't have life. So the sun appears. So Krishna appears, and he's always there, but he appears. And he appears, he does things. He shows his pastimes, and he exchanges in wonderful ways with devotees. So he's giving his mercy. Here he's being even more explicit. And the confidential, referring back to what we discussed last night, in confidential ways, his all attractive features and his sweet smiles. It's not like something worldly. Somebody smiles. That's nice. Somebody smiles and you feel nice. But this is Krishna. And when Krishna smiles, like, you know, he's passing by on his chariot, and the ladies are up on the rooftops, and he just glances at them. That's discussed in the next chapter when he's entering Dwarka. They're in their shyness, they're on the rooftops. Their affection is they want to embrace Krishna, but it's not appropriate, so they don't. They're on the rooftops. And Krishna just glances at them. And as he glances at them, that glance of Krishna enters through their eyes, enters into their hearts, and satisfies them as much as had they embraced Krishna. Krishna's glance is very powerful. Krishna's glance is so powerful he can create universes with his glance. Mahavishnu, just glancing. Or he can glance at the Indian Ocean and it boils. How long does it take to boil a pot of water in your kitchen? Full flame. That's a little pot of water. You got a like swimming pool over here. Try to boil the swimming pool. Try to boil the ocean with glancing. I mean, Krishna's glance is powerful. The Lord's glance is powerful. So when he glances and smiles, it's over. Having experienced that, it goes deep into the heart of everyone, and once it is so done, the living being is admitted into the kingdom of God, from which he never returns. So, the ladies on the rooftops, they're saying, how fortunate are the residents of Dwarka? They're receiving Krishna's glances and his smiles all the time. How fortunate. How glorious is this land of Dwarka? It's so glorious it puts to shame the so-called opulence and attractiveness of heaven. Final paragraph. The heavenly planets may be famous for offering better facilities of material enjoyment, but as we learn from Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, one has to come back again to the earth planet as soon as one has acquired virtue is finished. It's temporary. The opulence isn't the same, but whatever the opulence is, it's temporary. But Dwarka is certainly more important than the heavenly planets, because whoever has been favored with the smiling glance of the Lord shall never come back again to this rotten earth, which is certified by the Lord himself as a place of misery. So, earth, heaven, and Dwarka. And because Dwarka is manifest on earth, it places earth in a position better than heaven. Or it's the importance of the earth because of Dwarka. Not only this earth, but all the planets of the universes are places of misery, because in none of the planets within the universe is there eternal life, eternal bliss, and eternal knowledge. Conversely, anyone engaged in devotional service of the Lord can experience that, and therefore one of the five most important items of bhakti is residing in a sacred place. Like East Lansing. Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. So if we can't live there, the injunction of Rupa Goswami is one should hanker to live there and meditate on the wonderful value of that sacred place. So we're doing some service over here and thinking, that's my real home. That's my real home, is where the heart is, right? And when going to pilgrimage and to such places, one should be very grateful, appreciative, and respectful of the significance of such a place. And when we go to such a place, then we should not be caught. Our attention should not simply be caught up with the externals any more than we should think of the self as the body. The self is the soul within. The sacred places of pilgrimage, they're to protect them from worldly people. There's, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, there's this covering or veneer so that worldly people cannot enter the sacred Dham. They can be on the covering or veneer surface. But the place is there. And concluding sentence, Krishna's abode and he himself are identical. And a pure devotee under the guidance of another experienced devotee can obtain all the results even at present. So it's a nice conclusion. The ladies of Hastinapura are appreciating the great fortune of the residents of Dwarka. Krishna's going there, and we've had the good fortune of some association over here in Hastinapura, but they're always seeing him. And they're not just seeing him, they're intimate associates, they're his family. And to be a family member, you know, my brother's personality of Godhead, or my uncle or nephew or personality of Godhead. And then intimately associating with him. So Prabhupada's point is, even today, where the presence of, you can go to Dwarka and not see Krishna, but even today you can by proper application of the bhakti process with proper training, one can get the same benefit. Same. Because as we discussed yesterday, what the ladies are doing is it's hearing and chanting. And hearing and chanting is not less effective if you're not seeing the object. Because seeing the object, we discussed last night, if one doesn't have the right orientation, even seeing the object, you can get the wrong conclusion. The Shishupals and Kamsas and Washermans and others who saw Krishna and didn't have a clue. So the most important is the hearing and chanting in a quality way. That's the Bhagavat Dharma process that Vyasadeva provided for persons who are in this age of Kali. He saw the coming of the age of Kali and thought, ah, horrible. What to do? He compiled the Vedas. This is chapter 4. And after all this compiling, was not satisfied. Under Narada's instruction, he compiled the Bhagavatam to the direct glorification of the Lord. Can bring about all the relief of this, the harassing feature of this age of Kali, and more, bring one to the same benefit of the residents, eternal associates of Krishna. That's like, phew. But it's so. That's the potency. The messages of Krishna are not different than Krishna. The name of Krishna is not different than Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary form of Krishna. So taking the hearing and chanting of that up in the right way, it's amazing. But we're given direct association of Krishna. As Prabhupada writes, one can see Krishna in every page if one takes it up properly. If we're pure in our habits. Okay, so any discussion? Questions?
I want to understand, because you mentioned this entering the holy Dham, it is said that one cannot enter Vrindavan unless one gets permission from Narayana. So, does that entering mean just physical entering, or as you said today, that
it means spiritual entering? Physically, you can go there. But then, where one goes, it could mean different things, but this is one way it can be understood. That's, you cannot enter. You can go there, but you can't enter beyond the veneer, beyond the, you know, the rickshaws and the carbon monoxide and the gundas and the hogs and the dirt and the sewage and everything. You don't see the kalpavriksha trees and Chintamani and Sorabhi cows and, you know. Still, the land of Vrindavan acts upon the visitors. Just a very real appreciation of Vrindavan is the potency of the dust of Vrindavan. You know, the dust of Vrindavan can be taken as a nuisance. Everything's dusty. But by contact with the dust of Vrindavan, you can feel it. It's exhilarating. It's like an intoxicant. It you just feel different by in contact with the dust of Vrindavan. It's potent. Highly potent. Even the veneer is potent, so to speak of, having a deeper appreciation. Deeper appreciation is eligible for the entry into the entry into Vrindavan is available for those who have the qualification. Seeing, experiencing on the spiritual platform the presence of Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna and the associates of Krishna. There. It's like, you know, chanting the holy name. Some beginner can chant the holy name. It's the holy name. But their experience isn't the same as one who's chanting the holy name in complete concentration and complete devotion. Experience is very different. Same idea. We can't enter just by buying a ticket. Bhakti Siddhanta's description, you just making the sounds with the tongue and the mouth and the vocal cords, making the sounds is not what chanting is. It's, you know, so that's the difference between Shuddha Nam and Namabhas. It can be Namabhas, but it's just a bhas. It's a reflection of the thing, it's not the thing. Anything else? Yes?
This is more from the perspective of those who who have not met the devotees yet and haven't developed the faith. because this question comes up sometimes, that if we contemplate on almost anything, we tend to get attached to that thing. In spiritual life, therefore, if you are contemplating on something called Krishna, you are getting attached to that thing. What is the difference?
The difference between illusion and reality. But for a new person to understand that would be very difficult, because they're not understanding the difference between the external potency and the internal potency. The attachment that Krishna is describing in the Bhagavad Gita is the mind. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, accepting on the mind platform, you know, some idea. It's because it matches our own idea. So by contemplating something, there's this, you know, on the material plane, the mind becomes attached to that something. Now, the distinction is, by contemplating something that's pure, the first thing that happens is the mind becomes pure. Like, cheta, dharpana, marjanam. That's the first thing that happens. There's a cleansing action. And the covering of the mind, because the material mind is awarded to the living entity when the living entity wants to independently enjoy. So it's an instrument of false ego. So I contemplate in something, I want to make it mine, so I can enjoy it. And from contemplating Krishna, the first thing that happens is that tendency becomes washed away. To become the enjoyer of that. If it's done properly, that's the effect. And so, it's part of the problem that we have of becoming attached to Krishna, is because we can't be the enjoyer of Krishna. we're prone to being the enjoyer of things that we're attached to. But that's not the relationship with Krishna. We're the enjoyer. And the mind doesn't want to go there. We want to be the enjoyer. So attachment to Krishna takes purification. That's the first thing that happens. And when attachment to Krishna does come, the principle is altogether different. It's an ever increasing crescendo of how to be enjoyed by Krishna, or how to serve Krishna. You know, the happiness of love and the happiness of lust are worlds apart. And what passes under the name of love in this world is actually lust. But the happiness of real love and the happiness of lust, the attachment of the mind for some object and the attachment of the mind to Krishna, are just qualitatively altogether different. The dynamic is altogether different. It's in a purified state. How wonderful is Krishna? How can Krishna be enjoyed? How can Krishna enjoy? And everything has that dimension. Like the question of confidential. the cowherd boys, Prabhupada would like to speak about the cowherd boys. He said, I like the cowherd boys. The cowherd boys are wrestling with Krishna. And the game is when the party that loses the wrestling competition, the result is they have to carry the one who is the winner on their shoulders. So Krishna had to carry Sridham, because Sridham would beat Krishna. They would say, this is nectar of devotion. What kind of big man is he? They've seen how he defeats all these demons and so on, but he loses to them in wrestling competition. What kind of big man is he? So that's confidential. And their attachment is so strong. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's described that the cowherd boys, when they would go through the forest herding the cows, and here's Krishna, and here's the cowherd boy, and here comes the tree, and as they're walking along, and for as much time as they couldn't see Krishna because the tree was in the way, there would be great anxiety because they couldn't see Krishna. That's a different kind of attachment than by contemplation of an object. And the anxiety is not a possessive one or the enjoyer of the object. It's their love for Krishna. And that's the happiness of attachment, spiritual attachment. Seeing Krishna like 10 million years or more. There's a lot of moments. One moment after the next. Contemplation of possessiveness and the contemplation of love are altogether different. And worldly people will never know the difference because they don't know what is love. But Rupa Goswami gives the example just like. So it's not even just like, but just like a poor man, an impoverished man, somehow gets some precious item and then loses it. And what he feels when he loses that precious item, it's my opportunity to get out of impoverishment, and where did it go? Like that, one who has had some taste of Krishna, then that taste of Krishna is gone. But Krishna seems to have disappeared. But how can you compare? Even to the impoverished man having something valuable and losing it. So it's the other way around. The contemplation becoming attached is a reflection of, and a dim reflection of, attachment to Krishna. Prabhupada, please.